Welcome to the ball game, folks. Welcome to the ball game. Josh Ricardo here, Slam Pick Podcast, coming right at you. I really like that voice. Sometimes when I'm in the car, I'll do a voice like that too. I'll be driving and I'll just be like, WKTB Rochester, New York, coming right at you. We're out here in front of the Wegmans. We want to let everybody know that, hey, we got some free shrimp out here for you guys to come taste. And also, coming right at you, want to come right back, give us the phrase that pays, WTRP, stick it in the D and the B. Like, that's, I like that voice. I don't know. I love DJ voices. I think they're great. That's not what I do. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the show. It's so good to be talking to you, wherever you are out there. I hope you're doing something worthwhile. Maybe you're multitasking. Maybe you're just so enchanted by my voice. You're in trance from it, that you're just paying attention and focused on me, and that's even better, too. I got a cool show for you, as I always do. I do my due diligence. I have on Gina Savage, who is a female comedian and also comedy club manager. I've known Gina for a little bit now. Not too personally, but just through bumping into each other. And Gina was actually one of the first people I ever auditioned for here in New York. It didn't go very well. I don't know if she's ever given me a spot. But that being said, I haven't talked to her in a while. It's been a really long time. But I saw that she was doing shows, and I had run into her a couple times, and I decided she would be great. Who has seen more shit than someone who's been in comedy for 20 years in New York City? And I was right. Gina came on, and we talked about a lot of cool stuff. She was super open, and I thought the dynamic of going from booker to performer, manager or whatever, to performer is – it's unbelievable, probably extremely difficult, and I was right, and we talked about that, and I think it's a really interesting perspective into the industry, especially for a lot of you that email me and say, hey, man, I really want to do stand-up. This is the kind of interviews you got to listen to, because this person is starting a career while already being in the industry. It's not as black and white as you may think, so go ahead and enjoy. I am a very lucky man, as we all say, and as I always say, I am the Billy Zane of podcasting. Well, in the Titanic, and he said, I make my own luck because I'm a real man. And that's what I'm doing. I'm making my own luck, and I'm lucky today because I have Gina Savage on. Gina, say hello.
Hello. Wow, thanks for that.
We haven't seen each other in a long time.
I know.
Well, we run into each other randomly, but you know, actually sat down and chatted.
Yeah, I don't know when the last time was. Was it at Broadway or something?
It was probably New York Comedy Club.
Wow.
A long time ago.
Yeah, okay.
That we actually sat down and chatted. So, right. Context for listeners. Gina's been in comedy for a long time. She's a comic. She's involved in the business end of it. Mm-hmm. She fucking touches everything.
And has, yes.
And touches everything, you know, literally, figuratively, all that stuff. So I thought it would be cool to have her on just because, one, this show is about empowering women and sexy women and attractive women. And I thought perfect for you to come in and talk about comedy and everything else.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Happy to do it. And
it's exciting, right? I can tell you're titillated.
I'm titillated. I got, you know, I jazzed up. This is early for me, 11 a.m. You know,
it's all comics. When you said, so she, okay, just for reference, she picked the time.
I did.
I gave you a wide range of times. And when you said 11 a.m., I was like, fuck, she's pretty impressive. For a comedian, 11 a.m. is pretty impressive.
Yeah, yeah. 11 a.m., yeah. Because I don't even go to bed till like 5 or 6.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that an odd thing? Like where I don't either, but I've gotten myself, I think maybe because I've always worked 3 different jobs. Even now where I don't have to do that, I still wake up at like 9 a.m.
Yeah, there was
and
a time.
Go to sleep at 4. It's stupid.
There was a brief period where I worked for a real estate law firm in between comedy things. And I still wouldn't go to bed till like at least then at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. And then I'd have to be up and out at 8. So
this is what sucks about having that bug, the comedy bug. Because we'll just call it that. Because people do this. I remember one time I was working at an insurance agency. And just randomly, a one-off family member happened to be working for another agency that came in I didn't know about. Literally, I probably see this person once every 5 years.
Right.
This is way back when. And I just started doing stand-up, probably about a year in. But, you know, when you're a year in, a lot of guys, especially – like I'm from San Diego where it's a smaller market. Maybe New York guys get that other system a little quicker where you think in the first year it's going to happen. Like, any minute now, this thing's going to pop. And she saw me in the lobby randomly, like walking to get whatever, a drink of water or something. And I just go, oh my God, hey. And she goes, so how's that? How's the hobby? How's the,
the hobby?
Isn't that
no one takes the comedy? Yeah.
The moonlighting. I'm always moonlighting. I'm never, you know, has to happen for you not to be like, I thought for me, once your W-2 says what you do, that's when it's real, right?
You would think, but not necessarily. I mean, I'm in comedy on and off for 20 years, and my father is constantly saying, you're an actress, which I am, but it's like, I'm a comedian, you know. I am a comedian now.
You do stand up.
I do stand up. I mean, I manage the club, but I do stand up. My focus now is more stand up than it's ever been. Mm-hmm. Although I do agree with my dad, I'm probably a better actress than stand up, but I'm a better stand up than I was, let's say, you know, 10 or 12 years ago. Like, I'm really doing it a lot more.
So that's why I kind of brought that moonlighting shit up, because for the layman at home, when you work in the industry on the management side, and especially managing the actual club itself, and you decide you're going to try to throw your hat in the ring for stand-up, that is a whole other hill you have to get over before you can be respected by the performers and just your and just the industry, I would assume.
Sure.
So how hard is that? When do you even decide? Like, let's just kind of rewind a little bit. When do you decide, okay, I want to be in comedy? I'm assuming acting came first.
It
started.
Did.
Training.
And that's a really good question, and I thank you for asking it, because a lot of people really sort of gloss over the roots of, you know, how did I come into this? Mm-hmm. But I was an actress first and foremost.
Like method, what did you study?
Well, I went to Performing Arts High School, and, you know, you obviously have to audition.
Dramatic.
Yeah, well, you have the childhood that, you know, a lot of people have that sort of you have a desire, whatever that desire is, that you want to, you know, not be yourself. And so acting was a way for me to sort of, you know, be someone else, do something else.
I'm not going
to
plug the bad childhood thing, because that we always talk about.
Right.
That.
I'm not, I wasn't even going to expound on it.
No, but that's usually, I want to tell people, like, it is true. It's, no, I don't know what level, everyone has different levels of abuse or whatever it is.
Right.
And that's what kind of leads you to that.
So we're here.
Yeah.
And so Performing Arts High School, NYU Circle in the Square Theater School, and then around the – and I'm, you know –
Because you're a New Yorker. Born here?
Right. Born here. In the late 80s, early 90s, my passion for comedy became huge. And then the Improv was on 44th Street at the time, I believe. And I took a class with, you know, for those that know, he's no longer, but he was like an institution there, this guy Marty Friedberg. That's how
I even know that name. And
far back we go.
Yeah.
But I remember telling a story about how I baked a turkey for the first time, and, like, you know, you had a living thing that you put in an oven, and all of a sudden, like, you know, you exaggerate, like, what your experience is doing that. And I was hooked on comedy, watched everything, and of course Saturday Night Live and Gilda Radner and all that.
Yeah, I mean, and the influences late 80s, early 90s of comedy are very different than now. Everything's so packaged now. Everything's so directed at one kind of audience now. It's like, okay, this is for the millennials, and this is for the Asians, and this is for the black, and this is the ensemble of Saturday Night Live that have a lot of guys that maybe haven't even trained in improv yet. They're like 22-year-old guys. And we just want the clicks.
Yes.
So you're coming up in an era where there's some true fucking patriots of our arts. I mean, really – Gilda, all these great artists.
Right.
And New York is hopping. In early 90s, the city, the nation is saturated with stand-up. That's what people don't realize. Mm-hmm. I mean, A&E has the Night of the Improv or whatever show. USA is showing fucking stand-up. Like, everywhere you'd shoot, like, you would shoot the controller, it would be fucking stand-up.
Yeah.
So, of course, you're like, okay, I'm acting, but I'm also learning about stand-up. I'm going to go take this class. And now this is...
this is what happens. And then, you know, just throw in a marriage and other things, which I'm no longer married and haven't been for, you know, over 20 years. But
this is great.
But throw in all that, and it's a melting pot of things that get me back. Let's just say I moved to Florida where there's no comedy. I left, you know, it was like nomads.
Let's kind of talk about that.
You do?
Interesting.
Okay.
So you're leading this life in the midst of, okay, that's where the seed is planted for stand-up. But you're still leading this life where you're an attractive woman living in the city, and you're doing performances, and then you're dating. I mean, New York must have – what was New York like in that kind of era.
In the late 80s, early 90s, I was a barista at a Le Figaro Cafe, which is down the block from the Greenwich Village Comedy Club and the Comedy Cellar. Mm-hmm. No longer, but I think, you know, you could still see like remnant of Le Figaro Cafe. Mm-hmm. And it was a mecca earlier, you know, in its history, like people like Bob Dylan and all the great artists of, you know, the 60s would hang out there. So I was.
Was New York bad then too?
In the 80s? Well, you know, it was just it was pre Giuliani a little bit.
People kind of liked that era better, actually. It was
a little rough and tumble. Yeah, it was a lot more. I mean, it just seemed more alive in a different way than it does today. But I'm also older, so.
And you were getting in the mix too. I mean, you were in the mix with artists.
And my ex-husband worked for the Ritz nightclub, which is now Webster Hall, and so there'd be many late nights. It was rock and roll and comedy. That's what my life was at the time. I had met Barry Sobel, who has now, you know, like I was a fan of Barry's, and you know, he wrote Punchline, worked with Tom Hanks, you know, all over the place.
It was really hot then.
Yeah,
the 80s.
I'm not like the Beastie Boys or Run DMC. I could just recite it till this day. And he's a good friend, but I never thought in my wildest dreams that, you know, this person would be my friend later on in life. So, long story short, that's the time frame we're talking about. But what happens is in the 90s, I get married and we move to Florida.
Why Florida?
He wanted to open up a nightclub. Uh-huh. This is so like the Pope of Greenwich Village, kind of, if you know that movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Like where his head was at with the suits and everything lined up. And I was like, you know, with the leather jacket and like, no, babe, let's, you know, it was really. So
he's like, I want to open up a night. How long were you married before that happened?
We were together 5 years before we were married, and then it was a 2.5-year marriage.
He's like, I'm going to fucking – how early on is like the minute you guys get married, he's like, let's go to Florida?
Pretty much. My mother had passed. My grandparents had passed. I was really sort of like an island to myself, and I thought that's what you do. You know, aren't you supposed to get married,
hitched, and then do whatever your husband needs you to do, and
whatever it is. I was following more his dream than mine.
How far along were you in your career at that point? I mean, I don't think very far if you're able to just drop it and go.
Mid-20s, so not that far, and really just, you know.
Have you been on stage at all besides the class at that point?
I'd been not a stand-up stage, but you know, an acting stage. I'd had taken the class, and I'd been on an acting stage.
You waited to jump in. You didn't get on stage right away after taking the class. It didn't make you want to get on stage, or you were scared, or what was it?
No, I think. I think that the time frame, the chronology of events was just I just didn't, and then like just life took a turn. People got sick, you know, life circumstances.
Yeah, okay.
I didn't get on stage till after Florida, which I was there 2.5 years. Marriage falling apart. I got sober. I'm sober 20 years now.
Oh, congrats!
Thank you. So I left Florida. And
what was your drug of choice back then?
Cocaine. More than alcohol. I wasn't ever really a big drinker.
But you could do a lot of drinking when you're on coke.
Well, that's the whole thing. Yeah. It's one leads to the other. So, yeah, that was good times.
And now you're in Florida and you're a cokehead. I bet that was.
Oh, it was awful. Circumstantial,
to say the least.
Yeah, the thing about Florida that makes it so easy, you know, back then at least, you know, you'd have these quarter draft beers and $2 margaritas you'd have these, you know, these really easy ways to drink, and the thing was, you'd drink and it would set the tone for, you know, getting the drugs later. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was easy it was easy and cheap to drink.
Was it Fort Lauderdale, Miami? Where are you at?
and of all places, we were in Cape Canaveral, Florida, which is like the space. You know, now not so much, but. So he wanted to open up a club down there. What ended up happening, though, interestingly enough, was, you know, it was like with it enough where there was this really great college radio station, WFIT, FM radio, whatever. And I did do radio work down there. It was my first foray into that. So I got to, you know,
So what are you doing for work?
Bartending.
I
was a bar.
So you've been a nightlife person since the giddy up.
Since
pretty much
18.
I mean, barista, it's coffee.
Yeah,
so
since
not
8.
Like that,
but I worked at night.
Yeah.
Yeah. 18. So from 18 to present.
And there's really no performing besides the radio thing. That's the only outlet you really have
in Florida. It wasn't
until
I moved back to New York, which was 95, end of 95, and I got a job at Caroline's.
How do you know you have a problem in Florida? Because I have a lot of addicts in my family, and they have, these motherfuckers have yet to realize they have a problem. It's that denial is very thick.
Yes.
So how do you? Is it because of your youth at that point that you're like you have some time? You're like, holy shit.
Well, there's a. I think it differs for different people. Obviously,
of course.
I just knew I was slowly killing myself. I remember one time, I don't mean disrespect to my husband because we were indifferent, ex-husband, but mm-hmm. there was a period where, you know, there'd be like pot and there'd be coke and there'd be booze, and he would sit and sort of look out the window and stare out at the window. And I remember my stepfather, when I was a kid, would just be drunk and looking out the window, and I just felt like here are repeated patterns.
You got a fucking flashback.
I got a flashback, and then I read an article about Brett Butler. That's kind of where the comedy came in a little bit, because I read an article about her.
Brett Butler, right?
Okay. Yes, and her history with alcohol and drugs and getting sober.
She was cokehead too, right? I guess.
Yeah, and that. People say, what's that moment? But it was in that moment, and I really have to thank her, and I think People Magazine. Thanks, People Magazine.
Thanks for
listening. See where my, you know, the elevation of my reading habits were. But that helped me to recognize. And I knew people. I mean, I had been introduced to Alateen as a kid because my stepfather had a problem. So these were not things that I didn't know that I could
do. So it was already on your radar.
It was.
And it was a lot of little things building together that got you to where you had to go to get straight.
Exactly.
And the thing is, it's funny, is a lot of people have those aha moments. I thought I had a problem with sex. I went to a Sex Addict Anonymous meeting or whatever, and I wasn't hearing my story, you know? And then I kind of, you know, through therapy and stuff, kind of figured some things out. But at the end of the day, you didn't have like, oh, I was shitting my pants or I was blowing some guy for coke money.
No, never did that.
It was a really boring moment where your man is staring and you're like, oh, I know that look. I got to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, thank God it was that. And you know, like, you know, one of the things I prided myself on was, I didn't have a drug problem or alcohol problem if I could show up for work. And of course,
the functioning addict.
Right. And of course, my job is bartending. So how hard is it to stumble into your bartending gig, really? Yeah. And I missed it. And like, it was just a bizarre barometer for me, but I missed going in, and I'm like, well, you know, and so.
Do you not work in the nightlife once you get clean?
No, actually, people
don't. Caroline's is nightlife, you know, when you come back to New York.
Caroline's is nightlife, and I had a friend working at Caroline's, and I ended up working as a hostess there, and thus began a real career from that point, 96, through now to present. But no, I actually worked as a sober bartender for.
Is that hard in the beginning at all?
No, because for me it wasn't.
Like looking down on the peons of the drinking at that point? Are you...
No, it was a reminder. It really was a healthy reminder. And I think within two weeks of not drinking, I really saw things clearly for the first time. And I can't tell you how many years. I mean, at that point, I was only 28 years old. So my drinking really only lasted from 21. For an 18-year-old. I really legally really started really drinking at 21. So it was a 7-year thud.
You went hard. You must have
I
went
did.
Hard.
I went hard for me. You know, everybody's different. I mean, some people be like, you know, not a big deal.
Yeah.
But I worked actually in an adult nightclub. And as a bartender, you have to wear clothes and you have certain guidelines, you know. But that was
what kind of guidelines were they? It was like, hey, your tits have to be showing about 4 inches deep. What's the...
No, you wear like little bra tops and like at that time, bike pants.
Yeah.
And so that was, and there was the best part about that job was that, and it was an amazing, they treated us so well there, like better than any
ever.
Corporate experience I've ever had. No, this was in Florida.
Okay.
That's I mean, walk you to your car. There was no
stripper treatment,
literally no breakdown or set up a bar. You didn't have to cut a piece. You'd show up, bartend, leave. The end. You had no side work.
They knew, like, you are tits and ass. And
you are, but you know, it's a little, you know, it's a little bit. The dynamic at the bar is a little bit different. But I got to see, you know, a side of men that I didn't, you know, like
recognize.
Were
so
well, I mean, I wasn't one of those people that, you know, did anything to get or do, you know, drugs or, you know, any of that kind of stuff. I always had some modicum of integrity, you know. But here I am at the adult nightclub, and I got to tell you, I was treated well.
Adult nightclub. Now, when you say adult, I assumed originally it was just older, like just over 21, but you're saying adult.
I like naked people, okay, like naked chicks.
All right,
yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, so I did that, and then I did that for a year and a half. I saved up probably the best money I'd ever made in my life.
There's tons of money in that because
you're just making $1,500 a week.
That's unfucking believable. Yeah. Even now, that would still be unbelievable. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's funny because I have frequented adult clubs a lot just from it's like, oh, I'm dating a girl that works here, or it's some guy's like dying to just go and I'll tag along. Sometimes you want the waitress or the worker more than you want the dancer or the naked person. There's some more mystery to them. So when the girls are like really pretty that are in there working, you're like, it's not even about an attainable thing. It's just, I feel like there's something I like that better, you know? And so people just throw fucking money at you.
Yeah, they were throwing money at me. And but I didn't stay there long. I knew that that was just a means to an end. You know, they say, I mean, there were legitimately,
how
hear
you
the
give
stories.
Up that kind of money,
she's
though?
Going to college. She has three kids to raise. I mean, these things are really true.
Yeah.
And honestly, they were making their bodies work for them. But some of these women had amazing bodies. Some of them were amazing people. Some of them, you know, you could expect had some serious issues. Mm-hmm. And so, but that lasted about a year or so. And then I saved up my money. My friend who was working at Caroline's got me a job there.
Are you divorced in Florida?
I was divorced. Well, we got married in New York. So the divorce went through in New York. Oh,
but you were living in Florida when you were already separated from
your husband. Yeah, after I got sober, I did, you know, they say, you know, this is just, you know, you know, it's attraction rather than promotion.
You
but
12,
I'll just,
you 12-stepped it, I assume?
I had my father was in the program.
Okay, so you already had that foundation built.
I did.
Okay.
Yeah, but when I left, they say don't make any major changes. I just knew I couldn't get sober. And that's the case. I've been sober pretty much ever since with the exception of one night. So mm-hmm. I would have had 22 years.
Yeah, yeah. But you one night.
One night.
Relatively recent from the time you stopped.
Yeah, about 2 years in, I had one. Yeah, I was back in New York and wasn't making connections. Mm-hmm. And I have no problem talking about this because, you know, the thought of a drink or a drug just doesn't appeal to me. But I'm very lucky. I still, you know, do things to maintain my sobriety, you know.
I would think the business is so fucking hard. And granted, you know, we're not to the full trajectory of where you're at now, but you get into the hostessing thing at Caroline's and start building your career as management in comedy, not a performer really right off the bat.
Right.
So I guess there's a little bit of padding there, but I know just for me, my triggers are for sex, like someone's not answering my email or someone ignored my text or I'm not getting booked here or shit's not moving along. These things will build if I don't do my meditation, if I don't get myself right, if I'm not constantly working out.
Like, sure.
These are things I have to do to make sure that I'm not literally face fucking three women in a bathroom in a bar on the Lower East Side. Like, there is no middle ground for me.
Right. I went there with you in my mind. I'm like, I could totally see that. Yeah.
So your triggers, what are they?
Honestly, it's like anyone who knows me really well knows this. We pick the wrong business for my trigger.
Because it's rejection, right?
Rejection is my trigger, and it's particularly a love rejection, right? So, and then I pick impossible people that, like, it's just impossible.
So this little mix-up, two years after or whatever, you get sober, was probably based on a love rejection.
No, that was at that point. It was just, you know, sick and tired of being sick and tired. I rejected that, you know, sadly, I rejected that whole, I was so out of my mind. And my first love was he rejected me. And so that underneath everything, I mean, I loved my husband. I did. And in many ways he was the right man. I still haven't remarried since, but, and understood me probably better till this day than probably anyone ever did. Like,
it's saying a lot.
It really, really, truly, a smart man.
You have a body of dating work now, or if you
body
you,
of dating
you,
work,
you know what's what. At this
I know
point.
What's what.
So
but
to say that is pretty substantial.
Yeah. So I want to give him some props. He never gets them. But but you were talking like what motivate? I don't. We sort of went off on
your triggers. My trigger saying are the you had
rejection.
Your first love had rejected you, and that still resonates.
Yeah. So when I had the relapse, I guess, 2 years in, it was, you know, I think I was dating, I was at Caroline's. I was also working in another restaurant.
You're dating comics.
Well, I wasn't
then,
dating.
Are
it
you?
Was not in this particular instance. I was dating.
Which are awful to date. Well, I'm including you
in
this
too.
I don't know you like that.
It depends on who you're talking to. You know, right, because I've dated a few. But some will say they have a lot of integrity, and some will say that, you know, they're this or they're that.
That's the fucking problem, is that we're so charismatic. We have all these principles. We're so passionate about certain things.
Right.
But we crumble in so many other social areas.
You know, look, it's different. I've dated – I've dated some comedians, and some of them have been very fair and honest with me. Mm-hmm. And some are manipulative. Some are doing things career-wise that, you know, it's not that I'm too smart, but I'm just too aware when it's going awry fast.
You're very self-aware.
I'm self-aware, and then what
are you
what I don't like
though too?
Well, I think picking
where
them
one
to,
little thing you're like it's going bad
well,
or are you actually
well,
calm
well,
about
picking,
it.
Well, picking first of all, picking these types of people repeatedly is on my part.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
and
on your
recognizing
yeah.
that, you know, you can't change a person. I'm not trying to change you. I joke with Dustin Chafin about this all the time because my comedy is always like, why doesn't he love me? You know? Why doesn't he love me? It's like really pathetic comedy.
Dustin's another guy in the business that is kind of similar to Gina. He's a comic, working comic, and also he helps run a club.
Right, exactly.
Okay. So they very much relate to each other, probably.
We do. But, you know, he's like, empower yourself. And I'm like, absolutely. And I'm getting there. But yeah, the dating of the I think it's again different for different people. You know why you know gravitate to these people is different. I think I'm taking it's been a while. I'm actually started dating a detective.
At least you're out of the
that's really another way to go.
At least you're out of the box. It's so funny because I talk to female comics and they're like, you know, they have a hard time dating. Maybe not so much now, but you know, 10 years ago when I was starting. If female comics weren't like they are now, where they're being like, I remember women who are attractive women dumbing it down, literally wearing baggy clothes and looking kind of more masculine, so they wouldn't intimidate anyone while on the stage or whatever the fuck,
right.
You know what I mean? And now the industry's like, look as hot as you possibly can now, right? Like that's like the thing. And I find because women on stage, you're doing what men are doing as far as like you're going to share your fucking soul, you're going to bear it. And a lot of vanilla men or men in the normal environment of the world, they don't know how to really handle that. It may be more so but it must be hard for you because guys, I get on stage and girls are running up to me to talk to me and talk. How is it for you?
Well, okay. So you mentioned a lot of different things here. So
yeah, touch on them.
I will touch on them. So as far as look, you know, like they'll. Joan Rivers will say, you know, don't. It's intimidating for a woman to look, you know, like too beautiful on stage. Although she looked very nice in her years. Her later years, even she always looked nice to me. Mm-hmm. But you know, don't, it's an intimidating thing. I notice when I wear, let's say, a dress versus, you know, jeans, how I'm interpreted, how the comedy is interpreted. And I see that with, it can be disarming. And then I did, and I was opposed to it, but I did it just because I do try different things, and I like to challenge myself a little bit. Mm-hmm. One of these lingerie shows. Now, again, the comedy has to be first and foremost. You know, I'm not an idiot. You know, I've been in this 20 years. So, yeah, are people going to look at my ass, my tits, or whatever? That's going to happen. But if your comedy's not there and you're using that to fall back on, the audience is going to know.
Shame on you. Yeah.
And so – so it was really kind of in that moment, I'm like, do I even have really the chops to be doing this? And fortunately, I mean, they're not the greatest chops, but they weren't the worst chops either. Mm-hmm. And so I stood my ground, which was a learning lesson. Do I need to do it again? No, I don't think I need to do it. I don't have anything to prove by doing it. It's I might do it in a burlesque kind of, you know, thematic thing, but to just be in lingerie for lingerie's sake, I don't think there's any need for that.
Yeah,
I don't
no benefit if you know you have jokes, right?
Write the joke. Work out. You know, somebody who's at it, I'll mention, you know, it's like a Jocelyn Chi. I don't know if you know her. This is a young woman who's just at it all the time. There's people like Subha Agarwal who are out there. You know, they are attractive women, but it's not played up for, like, effect. You know, mm-hmm. like oh, look at me. It's just attractive women. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, but again, everyone's definition of attractiveness is different. I mean, you know, there could be, let's say, a full-figured gal, and someone's attracted to that. It's just women doing comedy, and I think that's the thing. Men of a certain type of man finds intimidating. One of my last boyfriends, and I'm sorry to go off on this, mm-hmm. But this is a while back, because when I say boyfriend, that means it lasted longer than 2 months.
That's the criteria for Gina.
Yes. It's like if it lasts
3 days,
like
2 months.
90 days. Boyfriend. I have product in my – like I remember I cooked a dinner for a guy, and I put like the sauce in the refrigerator. And the
Are you Italian or no?
No, I'm Jewish. I'm like Russian Jew. But I had to put the sauce in the refrigerator. And the thing is long since over, and like I looked in the fridge, I'm like, that is the freaking sauce from like a year ago. Like,
that's the sauce all the way in the back. It's
like, yeah, a movie plays longer than the relationship. Like, hey, Creed's been out longer than that thing. I lost my train of thought.
Okay, this is what's interesting to me. I think you've really nailed the fact about how you have to be on stage and what you think is right. And it really comes back to the work. And that's what it always should
yes.
be. And I think it's truer more now than ever that women can really be about the fucking work. I mean, they always were. But you know what I mean? There's a lot of little bullshit that I know women have had to put up with and still do.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, you being a female in the industry, and then on top of that, you were making decision on talent for a while, or maybe you still do, and you are now talent. So now you're a woman who – has some say in booking, if not a lot of say. I don't know the variance of like your job anymore, what you do, and how much you have a say in the actual lineups. But now your talent. So now you want to be getting booked somewhere. You book. Does that become a conflict of interest when you work for a major club
okay.
in New York?
That's a great question, too. I don't do a lot of booking. I do have influence, I think, I hope at this point after 20 years that when I tell Al Martin or Dustin or any – I don't want to name names because our bookers like to keep it private.
Yeah, of course. But,
I definitely can make very strong suggestions. And
because when I first came to the city, I auditioned for you. I mean, you were someone that I had to – I mean, Matt Reese set it up. Like,
right.
So you have to look at talent.
Have to look at talent. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I don't book the weekend shows. I book my produced shows, and I do a show called Broadly Funny. We'll talk about it, mm-hmm. but with Marla Schultz, and it's only women in stand up because it is one of the longest, if not the longest all woman lineup.
Okay.
We've been doing it, you know, since, I don't know, it's a long time, like at least, I don't know. It's a long time. That's the show I primarily book. And mm-hmm. then, you know, but again, my influence I think is pretty strong. But now as a performer, I think the industry and a lot of people know me now at this time, you know, as behind only a handful know that I do stand up and that I'm an actress. I mean, I was talking to another comic, Sean Lynch.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I had no idea you were an actress. And
I had no idea you were doing stand up until fairly recently.
Right. And so here's where it really came into play. I remember being I started doing stand up in 98 or 99.
Mm-hmm. That's a long, that's
it's
16
a long,
years ago.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think I honestly really tried it when we did one of the roasts for – I think we did a roast for Barry Katz, and we did a roast at the Boston Comedy Club, which he was, you know, technically like the owner of, mm-hmm. if, you know.
Yeah.
Owned the space, leased the space, whatever.
And Barry, he manages like Dane Cook. Yeah,
Dane Cook, Jay Moore, Chappelle, Tracy Morgan at the time, Judah Friedlander. It was like a whole roster.
Yeah.
We were – everyone
mm-hmm.
was the it time frame mm-hmm. for that. And so we were roasting Barry, and or it could have been Louis Schaefer, mm-hmm. who was the resident host of the club. And I remember, must have been Louis Schaefer, because Barry went into my ear, and I was, you know, going to roast Louis, who drove me nuts. And Barry went into my ear, and he's like, all right, well, go ahead and do it, and don't fuck it up, or something like, don't suck. And I just... It enraged me, you know. I'm big on, you know,
you
instant
really
rage.
You hadn't really even been getting up at that point, right?
No, but I wrote this thing out, and I didn't suck, you know. Mm-hmm. I didn't suck with like people like Rich. I mean, you know, I didn't suck. I did this before Madonna did the kiss with Britney. I had this cohort who was a teenage girl that, you know, answered the phones at the club, but she was very with it chick, mm-hmm. Jessica. And so we did this kiss, and Patrice was there. He's like, go for it, Gina, go for it. You know, it's just like crazy nonsense. So that was, that was a taste, not just of Jessica's, but I was a cheap. That was a taste of that, experience. And then I did it periodically.
Yeah,
and
periodically.
Then,
what is that to you then?
Like really randomly, like because I was still booking
like once a year.
I would say two or three times a year. And then
like how long?
for, you know, at least till 2005.
Yeah, so for you at home, stand-ups to be really great. This is why all the great stand-ups come from New York, in my opinion and most people's opinions, because you're doing about 5 to 7 shows a week at a minimum.
And I'm doing it like five.
She's doing that in a year.
Yeah, like 5 a year, and I'm working.
So she's not completely dedicated to that yet.
Not even remotely completely, but enjoying it. And part of my, I guess, training ground was, you know, dealing with men like Rich Voss and Keith Robinson and Robert Kelly, you know, just to be sort of in the mix with them, you have to keep your game up. Mm-hmm. And my game is not like Keith Robinson. We don't have game. You know, I don't really have a lot of game, but it did help with timing, and it helped with confidence and things like that.
Well,
so I was always around it.
Right,
absolutely.
And that's what I'm really terrible at in stand-up, and I've admitted this on the show a lot, is that I'd probably be further along if I was better at hanging out. And you are, one, forced to hang out because you are working.
Right.
And two, you like the vibe, you like the environment. Mm-hmm. So now you're dealing with these guys who are really at this point kind of coming up.
Yes.
You know? So you're in the mix.
Yes, absolutely.
So that's huge. That's a huge part of the game that you're already accomplishing, is being in it.
Right.
The problem is you're not getting on stage and doing anything with your talent to build up and use those networking things.
Absolutely.
So when do you start really kind of pressing that?
All right. So it's 2005. I'm actually working on Mark Burnett Productions. I'm working.
He's huge, right?
He's huge. I worked on a season of The Apprentice. I worked.
That's right.
As a transportation coordinator for the Contenders. So I got to see a lot of Sugar Ray Leonard and Sylvester Stallone, and that like must have been about 2006, I think. And then after that, because I was in California for a few weeks, I came back to New York and worked on another reality show. I think it was The Cut, a Tommy Hilfiger show. And then I was asked to meet with Al Martin. I think that's around the time frame. And then I worked for Al for a little over a year, and then I was tapped to work at Comics, and then got fired at Comics.
A lot of people got fired.
Everybody got fired, so I don't take it personally. I did at the time. I was like a wreck. And then I worked in for a law firm for 5 years. So then I come back and
So no stand up for 5 years.
No stand up. At that point I'm
this is like
spending
2010 we're at now.
Right. But here I had my comic friends. At this time we have Facebook, and then I'm producing shows with Marla Schultz.
Okay.
At the Laugh Lounge. So I'm now. I want to stay involved in comedy. The only way I can do it is producing. I don't think my self-esteem is like, Al wouldn't really, would he want me back? I don't know. I don't even ask. Mm-hmm. It's not until I see something on Dustin's Facebook page and I congratulate him for, you know, the Greenwich Village. And I think that's exciting for him. And that Al, I hear from Al, and I pick up a few nights and at Greenwich, and at that time New York Comedy Club and Broadway, and I'm back in the fold really 2011-12, so only in the last few years, and it's only then that it picks up momentum with stand-up. So really the last 4 years is when the stand-up kicks in.
Yeah, and you're doing it how often now, a week?
Well, still not as often as anyone who really wants it, but I probably say twice a week, and certainly a show is twice a month, so it's way more than like 4 times a year.
Yeah, you're actually doing it on a little bit higher level now. Mm-hmm. So when you're producing these shows, and now you're known as like, okay, she's a comic now, but also she's a producer. Like, you have a lot of hats you wear, which probably is kind of confusing to some people when they're dealing with you. Like, say another comic is like, you must have to really prove yourself every time you're on stage. You must have to, it must be some pressure that you have to really get over. More than the additional pressure, I mean, you have to get over in that sense, a little bit.
It is. I will say, though, that now that I've done it enough times, I think people were surprised that I was as funny.
They're expecting much at all, right?
And I think that they're surprised that I have more chops than even I thought I had.
Yeah.
Like, I feel that there's some organic things going on here because I'm an actress, right? So, and that's really true. More than anything, underneath, my father is right about that.
Then why are you not pursuing that more heavily?
Because, you know, there's all sorts of excuses and, you know, so many reasons. Well, he's part of the reason he's very sick. Mm-hmm. So I don't really take the chances I should be taking with that because I never know. Is this the time I'm going to, like, we had 3 times I had a scare and I was down in Florida this year.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's that. And so a lot of it, but I'm approaching it last few weeks, honestly, and I'm late in the game to this lot of ways.
Does that scare you too? Because it's a two-part question. Mm-hmm. What I was thinking is it's a double-edged sword here, because it must be easy when you have the connection you have to go, hey, because then the people that say you're working with Al or another club that already know you, and you're like, I like to produce a show. Great. I know you can do that. Perfect.
Right.
You've got the show. But then it's also a double-edged sword where you're like, okay, now I'm doing stand-up. So can you book me as a regular – you know what I mean? Like, that's something you're going to have to build up to. That must be a double-edged sword where you know the business, but then the performing comes in. It's a whole different ballgame now.
Right. Well, here's how I know that the ballgame at least is working.
Okay.
Because when someone doesn't show up to do a spot and the MC of the show, legitimately Chris Murphy, looks at me and says, why don't you get up tonight?
Mm-hmm.
I know he's not – he doesn't – There could be other comics. He doesn't. There's no reason for it. I know we don't do anything as comics. We don't put anybody. I certainly.
No,
I mean, there's other
no
people.
Free rides, yeah.
There's no free rides. I mean, listen. There is a little trade for trade.
Of course,
there
trade
is.
For trade,
you know,
yeah.
Trade for trade. A lot of that. There's a lot of that.
A lot
actually.
Of that.
But he doesn't owe me that. And mm-hmm. and I don't ask. And here's the thing. I could ask for it every single night.
Yeah.
I don't do that either. Mm-hmm. So when he's legitimately asking, or people know, then I'm not going to hurt the show.
Yeah.
Because it'll be people. Then I know that I'm on the right track.
Sure.
And I don't think there's such – I believe in all this universe stuff. I don't think that things happen by – I think that there's a spirituality to the way things unfold in your life. And I don't get any – you know, if I lose something, I wasn't meant to have it, or I was meant to learn from it. And grow from it.
Mm-hmm.
And in my recent, I guess within the last year, there were things that didn't happen or I wanted to happen or thought were going to happen that didn't happen. And all of that propelled, you know, the show that I do, my own podcast, the Red Light, it propelled my stand-up, Broadly Funny, all of that. And I wouldn't trade that.
Mm-hmm.
It
so
was painful, but I wouldn't
journey.
Trade
You're,
I love
you're okay
my journey.
With
my
it.
Journey's all right.
So you're not like, fuck, man, why did I do this 20 years ago? Why is my time running out? You don't worry about any of that because there really is no point. But it's human nature to do that. Especially I feel like in our industry, the window's a little bit wider with age a little bit now than it was maybe 20 years ago. But it really doesn't matter,
it
right?
It doesn't matter anymore. Look at all these shows on Netflix and Amazon and this. I mean, there's so much. There are so many avenues to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a question of time and being in the right, you know, having the right momentum and the right product, mm-hmm. you know, to continue to write. Like my worst thing is that I just don't write and I should write more.
So you're not putting the work in all the time that you should be. That's
no,
something
I'm
you want to get better at.
Right. I'm very good at I like to manage. I like being a leader in uh-huh. that sense. I think there's a certain Leo thing about me that like mm-hmm. I get off on that a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's not helping the creative part. So, and I'm a little lazy.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you have 80% of what you need, and like this is the 20% that's going to put you over the edge. You're like, I just would like it.
Fuck it.
I'm going to get 2 hours more sleep.
Let me go
sleep.
Delegate. I got to fucking delegate.
Exactly.
Let me go delegate to somebody.
Exactly.
So you're basically the last 4 years more than dabbling in the stand-up.
Yes.
And still maintaining the job, which is managing the stand-up club.
Yes.
And that is becoming a little bit conflicting with you pushing yourself for that 20%.
That's it.
What do you think has to happen?
Well, it's only – seriously.
Is it a you thing only or
– It's the management of time.
Mm-hmm.
So I work a 50 –
Give us an example of what it is to manage a comedy club on a day-to-day. Like give us kind of a little breakdown of what your day consists of.
Well, when I go in, there's a plethora of emails that I have to go through.
And not just from stand-ups, but from in general.
From producers, from Al, mm-hmm. you know, from Eric, from staff, from everyone.
Al
from
is
every,
the owner, everybody. That's who
from
owns.
Al Martin.
Yeah, okay.
So there's a lot to sort of and you know, we have sometimes 5 shows a day there.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine the email exchanges, okay?
And this is bread and butter. This is what puts the majority of money in your pocket.
Right.
This job. This is you have to pay attention to it. It's not like these people think, oh, why can't you just kind of fuck around and get the job done? It's a very intense, focused job you have to do.
It is.
A lot of moving parts.
A lot of moving parts. Now, that's just sort of the administrative end in that regard. But then I'm also in the office and I answer the phone. the entire time I'm there. The entire time.
So
I'm
Broadway
there.
Comedy Club is a two-story venue where they have a huge showroom on the bottom floor and then a showroom up top. And do you have any? I mean, a little bar area. I mean, it's a lot. It's,
yeah, there's
of phone
a
calls
lot of components to the place.
That's what I mean.
Right.
So people are calling
right.
you, and yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine it's hundreds of calls a day. Mm-hmm. Because we have all sorts of deals that you can, you know, Groupon or Living Social or
you're doing business.
Business
when it's closed.
Inquiries, you know, on the space. So there's all day long. Sometimes quiet, honestly, to be honest.
Every
you know,
now
sometimes
and again,
I can get an hour's worth of a lunch and a Netflix show. I mean, in truth, I'll be honest. But for the most part, there's something to do. Okay, so the phone is ringing. I'm fielding these, you know, emails. Mm-hmm. Then let's talk about the club itself. Like yesterday, it's deliveries, so you're getting all of the product for the place. You're signing, you're checking. If you do your job correctly, you're checking every little thing that's on. So I did all of that yesterday, Al. I swear to you. And you're making sure that, you know, that's being done.
Yeah.
Not to mention that now, because it's daytime and, you know, the door's opening, it's freezing. Mm-hmm. So you add, like,
there's elements involved.
Atmospheric elements to the thing.
And this is the day, and I'm assuming your shift goes from the part of the day until the shows, right?
It does, because after I manage in the day, you know, whether we have an open mic or there's an improv show for kids or, you know, some specialty thing, there's usually something, I will stay and work box office.
Mm-hmm.
And also be like a second string manager for
the
night.
Night manager.
Right. And I do that, and that's a 56-hour week.
So just this is why I asked you to do
right.
that. Because people don't understand is that, yeah, we talked at the top of the show, moonlighting, the hobby, whatever. You're also – now you have to write stand-up. Now you have to find a way to perform after working that 56-hour week.
Right.
And even though you're working – amongst the stand-up nation, that doesn't mean there's anything creative going on. It doesn't mean you're doing anything towards your
no.
career.
In fact, it's not.
It's
but
quite the opposite. It
right.
sounds like.
And a lot of times, like, you know, you talk to other stand-ups that have their day job. I mean, they have to have a day job
yeah.
for the most part. You know, most
of
us
a way
do.
To make money all the time. Yeah.
So I'm not alone here. I'm just happen to be in the mix a lot more. But it's just as I wouldn't say it's as tedious as some, you know, I'm in a cubicle. Like, I'm around the elements that I need to be around, or I'll hear about things, or, you know, like, I'm in it.
But how do you cross that barrier? That's the last thing I was going to bring up. How do you, because you know, oh, this guy is managed by this guy. I would love this guy to look at my tape. Now, how do you fucking
you have that? To get good, period. You
what,
just, that's
you
with
were,
anything.
Let's say you got that
I'm going to get good. I'm getting better.
Let's say when you get
yeah.
that good,
yes.
and now you want to utilize some of these contacts, how do you orchestrate that? How do you, like, hey, I don't know if you remember, but we exchanged emails, you know,
right.
about your other act. I would love for you to look at this.
Well, like you said, it's like it's all about prioritizing and managing my time, which I haven't. I really have sort of let the whole thing sort of, in a sense, derail. Like, I have to – so last night I didn't stay for my quote-unquote entire shift. I had someone cover the last 4 hours,
mm-hmm.
and I took care of, you know, personal needs, which I've neglected, you know, mm-hmm. like – you know, I live like, you know, my space is a reasonable size space, but like I'm in it like a college kid. Like, I throw clothes down.
Yeah.
It's not a mess. It's just
it's not organized.
Like, I haven't really – no, it's not even that. It's just I've been there 17 years, and it's like, you know, this is not reflective of where my life I'd like it to be. So there's a lot of little things I'm tweaking
mm-hmm.
to make it to get to the
to
next –
free up that
to get
space.
To the next level shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's and you know, Sean Lynch, like I talked about him before, he didn't know when we did our interview that I was an actress.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of – some people do. Some people have known. So I've – you know, I've done other people's things here and there.
Sure.
And so the more I put myself out there – and that's it. It's just – and that's a lot.
So you're not going to have any qualms when that day comes where you feel like you're where you want to be to going to – hey, so-and-so at CAA, I know we exchange emails where I was a manager. This is me, though.
I'm not going to waste anybody's time
of
with
course.
A subpar product. And
you're not worried about them seeing you as the girl they or the woman they exchanged emails with about, hey,
no,
I want to get my fucking showcase over there. You don't care about
no,
them.
No, and the,
you don't
and
think it'll matter to them.
I don't think so. I mean, most people know me enough now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I was at New York Comedy Club on a show that Madison Malloy and A. Marie Castillo put together. And Conan Smith was actually there. He's a friend, and I've known him. He's one of the, to me, always been a good guy. And he was there to watch Eric Newman, I believe. I don't know if I'm giving away too much. But, yeah, he was there to watch. He wasn't there for me. You know, and I got a little nervous because not only is he a friend, he's someone I know from that side of the business.
He's a manager, he's agent.
Yeah, he's manager, and mm-hmm. he's got like he's all involved in a lot of projects uh-huh. now. I forget the name of his company. That's how horrible. Like, he's my friend. I don't know what he does. I don't know. He does some stuff.
I was trying to get some context for the audience, and you don't even know who the fuck
like,
he is.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. He's who knows what he's doing now, but it's good. It's all great. But that's how.
He's an important guy, right? She's nervous.
He's an important guy. We once went to lunch 100 years ago. He's great. But that's how, like, that's because I can't, I look at everybody like they're my friends, you know? Yeah. Like, I just know the guy. So anyway, but I got nervous because, and, you know, at this stage of the game, it's just I don't want the nerves to play against me. It's like, it's your friend. It's like performing in front of your family.
That's awful too.
And that's, so it is just horrifyingly bad. But, you know, but, yeah, so it was a little awkward, but I think there's enough of who I am as a person now that it doesn't really matter. My nerves sometimes work for me. I mean, I know all the things. I watch myself.
Yeah.
You know the things. You know when you watch yourself.
You know what you're doing like, right and what you're doing wrong. And
yeah. I say the same thing every time I watch myself.
Maybe you should start doing it a lot more so you can get rid of that same thing.
Yeah, that same thing. No, every time I say it, it's like, she could be smarter. She's so on the cusp.
Yeah, because the fucking booker talent, the whatever appraiser comes out of you.
Yeah.
Like appraising yourself, you're like, I don't know, my value's not that much right now.
It's there, and yet...
There's a glimmer.
There's a spark, but she could be smarter.
Plug where you're at and where people can find you.
People can always find me at the Broadway Comedy Club. I have a show, Broadly Funny, coming up January 31st, 8 p.m. So please call the club and make reservations, 212-757-2323. I have my own...
How often is that?
It's twice a month. Look for it.
Okay, cool.
And I have... a podcast that I do along with Ricky Sofer when she's in town, but right now it's pretty much my baby. It's called the Red Light Podcast Redux. It's on iTunes. It's also on Podomatic, and it also airs every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. on WROMradio.net, Detroit.
Nice. And
yes.
Plug your Twitter and Instagram. Are you active on those things?
I am very...
As a female, Instagram could be a really great tool if you're an attractive female. You could really fucking work that angle.
Yeah, I haven't really worked it enough, but I got a 600 and... I had 666 followers the other day, and I was like, it's the devil amount of followers! But you can find me at Sav in the City Pics on Instagram, Savage in the City on Twitter.
Savage spelled the normal way.
Savage in the City, the normal way on Twitter.
Awesome.
Thank you
so
much.
That was fun.
That was fun.
You have fun?
I had a great time.
You nailed. That went fast, too.
Yeah.
That's how you know it's good.
Yeah. You know it's really good? Because it's hot and heavy.
And there she is. I want to thank Gina for coming on. Gina, you're a lovely, lovely woman. Sexy and fierce and all that shit. That's nice. Make sure you guys follow Gina at Savage in the City. Make sure you go check out her... monthly comedy shows at Broadway, Broadly Funny, and go support her because she's awesome. And thank you again, Gina. That being said, I got an email here from Jonathan. Jonathan lives in Rhode Island. He says, hey man, when you come to Rhode Island, can we triple team? What does this say? When you come, Jonathan from Rhode Island writes, hey Josh, great show. Thank you, Jonathan. When are you coming to Rhode Island? I don't know yet. And when you do get here, can we have three girls to fuck? I don't know if you heard a story about me or if I said something, but if this was, this was a while ago, yeah, we could. We could do that. But I'm engaged now and I don't do that stuff. I don't partake. But I will be gladly, you come see me at my show after the show. I'll gladly hook you up. I will gladly wingman it for you. That's the least I can do for you coming to see me. So for future reference for all of you out there, when you come to Josh Ricardo's show, you're having problems with ladies, come, we'll talk about it. I'm not saying that I'm, you know, the foremost authority on females. I just know for a fact that if you stand next to me, we'll figure it out. I think I can guide you. All right. I want to thank everybody for listening to the show. You can always find me at Josh Ricardo, JOSHACCARDO. Instagram, fucking Twitter, all that stuff, and joshacaro.com. You can get free links to everything I do, as well as check out all my work and the show Dating on Set, which is my web series TV show. All right, guys, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your week.